Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hello, everybody. That was a weird ending to a really good card. First of all, before we hit the intro, happy birthday, Carlos. It's Carlos's birthday today, 24 years young.
Thank you very much.
Let's hit the intro. Yes, sir. So, we've just finished watching UFC Vegas 21, Brunson versus Holland. I am Mags, and with me, birthday boy and current British Arco gold medalist, Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
I am good. Still as strong as ever and ready to take back over on April the 12th. Watch this space.
Yes, yes, yes. So, let's quickly run through these prelims. We started the card in the flyweight division. Bruno Silva getting the second round KO of JP Bayes. Then we moved into the bantamweights with a first round knockout for Montel Jackson against Jesse Schrader. First decision of the night was in the middleweight division. Trevin Giles against Roman Dolidze. Another KO. I think it was something like the second or third latest KO in UFC history, with Grant Dawson getting the knockout over Leonardo Santos with 1 second of the third round to go. And then we rounded off prelims with Marion Renault dropping the result to Macy Chiesa. Going into the main card, we were originally going to have 6 fights on this main card, Carlos, but unfortunately, just hours before the beginning of the show, Gregor Gillespie and Brad Riddell was called off. Riddell's camp has had a bout of COVID, which also means it affects Volkanovski versus Ortega next week, so we'd lose that fight as well.
Obviously Volkanovski's picked up either symptoms or he's got coronavirus either way. I'm sure it'll come out later on. But who was the woman who passed out, fainted?
Stolyarenko.
Stolyarenko, yeah. For the one part, I love the UFC, but that part is disgusting. The fact is she passed out the first time weighing in, and you allowed that poor girl to try and weigh for a second time. Mm-hmm. If her team wasn't there, she would have passed out again and fell on her arse again. Mm-hmm. That's disgusting. Don't ever do that again.
She's come on to social media and kind of explained what has gone on. She's totally took responsibility, said it was her fault. She cut to the weight limit too early, and has said that anyone who does extreme weight cuttings to get to the weight class that they're fighting in knows that you can't stay at that weight for long because you've drained your body of all its natural resources, and that's what happened. Basically, she cut weight too long, didn't make it into the weighing time and collapsed.
Well, that's it. When you cut in so much water like these fighters do when they come in so close to fight, they can cut up to like 10 to 20 pounds, if not more. I'd put money on with some fighters. So it's a lot of water they cut, and especially when, and as well now when the masks are on your face and you're already cutting water and your already body's sort of lacking oxygen in the first place, last thing you want to be doing is covering your face and shutting your body off in a way. So mm-hmm. It's just dangerous for that. It's like McGregor when he put his tweet out, if you're sick of cutting weight, move up a class. Simple as that.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree anymore. Before we get into these main card fights, a little bit of housekeeping to do. Shooting the Sports Itch now have a Patreon. So you can go over there and join that at patreon.com/shootsportsish and get some really cool extras. And I think there's quite a few different tiers where you get different kind of bonuses. So yeah, please consider joining that and really help the team here at Shooting Sportsish. That's at patreon.com/shootsportsish. And whilst you're there as well, it'd be cool if you went and checked out some of our sponsors. We're sponsored by Thrive Fantasy Betting, and we're also sponsored by Symbol. So yeah, if you want to get your betting on, we'd appreciate it if you went over there and tell them that Shooting the Sports Ish sent you.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. We thank you for doing that. Especially go to the Patreon if you want the best out of Shooting the Sports Ish. You'll definitely get it in the Patreon. And say if you're a betting man or a betting woman, they're the two companies for you.
Absolutely. So let's go into this first fight. Starting the fight with one of the funnest guys in the heavyweight division, Tahar Tuivasa.
Punch people's heads in and drink this.
he was taking on Harry Hunsucker, who was making his UFC debut, and Tahar Tuivasa, rumours were that he was pretty much on his last kind of legs with UFC, and if he didn't put up a decent performance, he was potentially going to get cut. I'd say he put up a fairly decent performance, walks away with a 49-second knockout, started with some massive leg kicks, which absolutely just destroyed Hunsucker. Tahar then just throws a massive right hand. You could see that Hunsucker just was destroyed from it. Tahar kept swinging. Hunsucker went to the floor. Hammer fist. Fight over, pretty much.
That was it. Tahar just came in there. He knew this was a fight for him. He needed to win it. He was going to be one of the next fighters to get caught, especially if he didn't win this fight. And the way he did it, and gotta give his props to his opponent, and that big right hand that he landed on him. But Tahar just hit it like it was breakfast. Like, yeah. The guy literally says that he does. He likes to punch people's heads in. And he likes to have a beer. So that's the way it is. I'm glad, to be honest with you, I'm glad he's not a win, because I'm not bored of Tahar Tuivasa. I'm glad he's got the win so he can stay in the UFC. I just love his character. The fact he's a fucking Aussie, he makes it brilliant.
Yeah, the one thing with Tahar, it brings character to that heavyweight division. He's never going to be a technical fighter, but no. he's always going to give you his all, and he proved that today. And when his back was up against the wall and it was looking likely that he was going to get cut, he pulled out in the clutch and got the win that he deserved.
Yeah, definitely. He's just one of them fighters. He'll probably say it himself, there's a little skill there, little technique. He just knows he's a heavyweight. I think he just made the mark with 0.5 pounds. I think did he weigh in that? 265 point something.
Yeah.
So he'd literally only just made the mark. So he's a big guy and he's got some fucking power there. And he knows if he cracks you or one of them, you're getting put to sleep. But he also takes the risk of taking the big hits that he did early on in the round. But like I said, he ate that one and... Yeah,
I'm
probably guessing he's had about five
shoes, been out. Absolutely. Then we went to a fight in the bantamweight division. Gustavo Lopez taking on Adrian Yanez. And this was... I enjoyed watching this fight. I thought that Yanez was so heavy-hitting for such a small guy. He had a lot of power in his shots. Just really kind of dominated Lopez with the different ways he was coming, the different angles that he tried. Lopez, fair play to him, was able to move in and get a lot of his own shots, but when Yanez turned it up, he absolutely destroyed Lopez for the first two rounds, really kind of dominated him. And then started the second round, and within what, 4 or 5 seconds of the second round, he absolutely drops Lopez with a right hand. Yanez went to follow up, didn't need to bother, did a walk-off knockout, and Yanez picked up a very classy, slick win.
Yeah, that was brilliant, that, especially the walk-off KO, like, that's just Mark Hunt style all over. In that fight, you could definitely see it was a style of speed versus power. They were both very evenly matched in the skill set, and they were both trading shots off, and they were both throwing leather like it was nothing. So they impressed me, both of them impressed me. They were a bit... I like the finish. Love the finish. I would have... In a way, weirdly, I would have loved this one to go to decision, just because it were a close fight, and if it did go to decision, it would have been one of them ultimate fights of, which way could it have gone, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we saw the way it went, and... what's his name?
Yanez.
Yanez. He just absolutely dominated, and the beautiful shot as well. It was so fast, even in slow motion, it still looked fast. And then when they like, oh, let's watch it in real time, he's like, what are you doing? It's like literally, it was like someone just switched a light on, and then he switched the light off.
Yeah,
it was that fast, and it's wow.
It's not often you see those kind of walk-off knockouts, and when you do, they are very, very memorable, and this is kind of like a benchmark win for Yanez.
Definitely, impressive wins. Fast hands like that, he must have had some boxing experience down the line or somewhere like that, but Jesus, he's got some speed. He's even got some power. I know there were commentators were saying about his speed and that lot, but he was more flat-footed in a way for me, and when I had mates around today, obviously it's my birthday, so they were asking me about the flat-footed, and I was giving my opinion on it. Sometimes flat-footed, you've got a lot of power there, and it looked like he were throwing with bad intentions, and he definitely were, especially the right hand was beautiful, just so fast, on the mark, and not only that, the way he were able to hit and then get out of the way straight away, so he avoided that oncoming shot, was just mwah.
Yeah, really, really well played. Then in the middle of this main card, we had Cheyenne Barz taking on Montserrat Ruiz, and this was basically a lesson in ground game control. First round was pretty much 5 minutes of Ruiz controlling Barz in the scarf hold, able to really kind of land those punches to the face while still controlling the arms of Barz, and Ruiz just was so comfortable, just staying on the ground, really working hard, and just making sure that Barz was as uncomfortable as she could be for the first 5 minutes. Second round started off a little bit more aggressive for Barz, a little bit more ground game, and fair play to Ruiz as well, because she showed she can still throw hands. She wasn't just a ground game specialist, she was able to hang with Barz on the feet as well, but I think Cheyenne definitely had more power whilst on the feet. But when Ruiz had enough, or when she was feeling a little bit uncomfortable, she took it back to the ground, and again went for that scarf hold, and was able to yet again keep Barz controlled on the floor for a long, long time. In this round, Barz used a lot more of her legs to try and force her way out of position, which almost worked, but Ruiz was pretty much wise to it and was able to just basically change up position and keep Cheyenne on the ground. That for me meant that Barz needed a knockout in this third round, or needed a finish at least. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to get it. I thought that this was probably a better round, this third round. It stayed on the ground a hell of a lot more. Both girls getting some cracking shots in. Barz having a lot more of the punches in the pocket and the ranges and the different kind of strikes. Again, it was able to go back down to the ground, but Barz was able to get out of position, able to switch, and unfortunately she was pinned down again, and then come to the end, there was a little bit of a tussle between these two girls. They were both pretty worked up. I think Barz took a shot after the bell. And then they started a bit of a pushing and shoving. Ruiz giving, flipping the bird, giving Baz the middle finger. Basically, they were told to shut the fuck up. And Ruiz picked up the unanimous decision.
Yeah, Ruiz definitely deserved the victory. I'm going to say a couple of things. Obviously, Baz, leave your fucking coach. Jesus Christ, he's shit. Absolute dog shit. With these instructions, the first 10 minutes, he was just telling you what she were doing to you.
Yeah.
Any dickhead could have told you that.
I mean, but just to chirp in, Michael Bisping was on Twitter as well as commentating, as he tends to do.
All
and
right.
He was saying the way to get out of that position was to throw the legs back and try and...
She needs to explore out of it. It needs to be fast movement.
Try and control the head with your legs so you can pull out of it. And he was getting into a Twitter argument with some fans on Twitter who were saying, no, that's not the way to do it. And he's like, okay, you tell me the proper way to do it then, dickhead. I'm only an MMA fighter. I know what I'm talking about, but yeah, you tell me. You're right. The coach was woeful, absolutely woeful.
It was dog shit. Simple as that. I'm not going to put it up a lot of way. It was absolute dog shit. It was just for the first 10 minutes, you're telling your fighter what their opponent's doing. So, oh, she's just laying on top of you. Oh, it's just the game plan. Oh, she's just laying on top. Oh, she's just doing the same thing. No shit. You're just saying exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
Exactly what.
And it was working.
Exactly
that's
what Mike Perry was saying about Cornerman. How shit some of they are because you're paying them money. For them to tell you what's going on in the fight. You're in the fucking fight. You can see what's happening. You're on your back. And fair enough. We're fighting the first round, 5 minutes. Wasted. Definitely a 10-8 round. That's one thing I'll say about the commentary team. Questioning it about a 10-8 round. Come on, dummies. That was definitely a 10-8 round.
It was about 4 minutes, 50 seconds of control for Ruiz.
Exactly. And you can't say to me that's not a 10-8 round. Come on. That's fucking stupid otherwise. And then... the second round, I think she had what? Like, they were in 4 minutes of control. Mm-hmm. Then the third round, about... What were it about control?
Third round, it was probably about a minute.
Yeah.
She did almost 10 minutes of control over the three rounds.
Yeah, so it's... she absolutely dominated her on the ground. And then I was literally saying it in between round one. Because she's not known as a ground fighter. She's a better stand-up... Vez is a better stand-up fighter. So when she was in the first round, she was getting fucked up, simple as that. He's still pissing me off that they were questioning it's a 10-8 round. Definitely a 10-8 round.
It's weird because only one judge actually gave it a 10-8 round.
Exactly. So I'm like, what the fuck? Like, how? Like, how can you not judge that? Like, seriously, come on. But then obviously when Vaz was on her feet, she was... It's in a moving. She wasn't staying still, and that's exactly what she needed to do. And then she was getting sloppy, basically letting herself get put into the clinch, and then getting took back down by the same thing. And then a coach were then exactly saying the exact same thing, exactly what's going on in the fight. Get rid of your fucking coach. Move somewhere else who's gonna help you and teach you, not just in the gym but in fights, because it didn't look like you had a fucking clue what you were doing on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But then saying that, Ruiz, obviously being the shorter opponent, she took the game plan, took the bigger opponent down, used her own weight against her. I thought after the first round, her arm was going to be pretty much fucked because of how hard she were holding that base of that reverse bulldog choking away. And she's a little tough cookie, that girl.
Yeah, 10 minutes that she had that arm in that position.
Exactly, and she didn't once like sort of let up. And yeah, fair enough, third round, after 10 minutes of control, I don't think anyone could say, oh, maybe she were in a bit shit, because I don't think she were. I think she were, to be honest with you, I could have given her all three of them rounds if I were to be biased, which I'm not, which obviously the last round, gonna have to go to Bears, because she did. She did a lot more in that round than she should have done in round two.
Yeah, she did more in that third round than she did in both the first two rounds put together. Let's go into the new co-main event. This fight was actually meant to be, I think, second on the card, with Gregor Gillespie and Riddell being dropped from the card. This moved into co-main event, and what a co-main event it was. Max Griffin taking on Kenan Song. another first round knockout and a superb victory for Max Griffin. Started off both fighters really bright, really wanting to hit their opponents hard very quickly. Griffin coming out with the jabs and Song with the attempts at head kicks. Griffin kind of like started to put the pressure on a little bit earlier than Song did, but Keenan was able to defend well. We get back to the centre of the octagon. Griffin really trying to light Song up. Song tried to push away with the front kick, but Griffin not allowing for that. Lands a right hand. You see Song's eyes cross. He wobbles a little bit. 1-2, pop, pop. Good night. And Song was out. And not only, I'm not talking about a normal kind of UFC knockout where the guy is put asleep and then he's awake. This guy was knocking his heads out. He was face down in the octagon for a minute easily. A massive win for Max Griffin. He's been an MMA and UFC veteran for a long time. I think this was his 11th fight or something like that in the UFC, and he won't get a clearer win than that.
Absolutely not. Song were definitely like sleeping off that jet lag, especially he were knocking his heads out. And Max Griffin, this was one of them. It were, again, they were both equally maxed on the feet. It was Song getting his own good shots off, he was banging with him, and it was good to watch. But then Max Griffin, just that right hand landed perfectly on the button, and like you said, you just see Song's eyes just sort of rolling back of his head, and it's like he didn't have a fucking clue what was going on. So yeah, good win for Max. I think it's like two wins in a row for him. Like you say, he's a veteran in the UFC. Not really quite making it up in the rankings like a lot of people.
No, he's still got a negative win-loss record. I think he's won 5 and lost 6, but he's certainly making waves with those two victories in recent weeks.
Well, that's it. He's this performance now, he's definitely going to open up a better opportunity for him moving on. Talking about bigger opponents, maybe not. Obviously, the welterweight division at the moment, you've got Usman versus Masvidal for the second time, which I don't think should. Do you really think Masvidal deserves that? I don't.
It's a money fight.
It's definitely a money fight. You can't not. But then again, who else can you fight? You've got Leon, who's already said, I think today or yesterday, that they're trying to get Corvin, but they'll see what he has to say. And who else in there what you could give him? Because, you know, again, he hasn't really got a record to the stage where you could say, yeah, he could fight a top five and probably stay in there and hang with him. After a couple more performances the way he did tonight, possibly. But that's just going on his performance tonight. If he goes back in the gym and works on his game and carry on doing what he's doing, hopefully his work pays off, because it's always good to see someone who's been in the UFC for a long time actually. And Bisping although himself, yeah, the commentary,
live up to your potential.
Yeah, so basically, I think you've been in the UFC for so long, you don't want to basically end up leaving the UFC or retiring, going, yeah, I was one of the longest fucking reigning UFC fighters, but I never made it anywhere close to a belt. You don't want to be like that, do you? You don't. It's like you're not even a gatekeeper at that point. You're literally just one of the fighters. You're just winning and losing.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, looking up and down the MMA rankings for the welterweights, there's not actually a lot of fights been made. There's a lot of like talking about fights and potential fights. For me, I think it'd be interesting to see Griffin go up against someone like Michel Pereira.
Yeah, that'd be a good fight for him, because I think obviously is Michel Pereira coming off all that crap with fucking Diego Sanchez, and is that really his last fight? And stuff?
No, he got the decision against Caelan Williams last, but yeah, there was the DQ against Sanchez pretty recently. I mean, looking again, you could even say maybe Cowboy Oliveira.
That'd be a good fight for him, yeah, definitely. I mean, especially with the
it would give Max the opportunity to get that win back, because he lost to Cowboy a couple of fights ago. and this Max Griffin maybe will be a better fit for Cowboy.
Well, definitely two definitely bangers right there, and if you throw them in the octagon together, I guarantee you're getting a showdown. I think Sean Shelby owes you a thank you there. I think he was made of a fart.
Well, Sean, hit me up, J. Kirby on Twitter. Let's get into this main event. It's not often these smaller cards disappoint, and this one I don't believe has disappointed, but what has disappointed is the Harp going into this far. Kevin Holland taking on Derek Brunson. This is a Kevin Holland who broke every record in the book for UFC, fighting 5 times over 2020, 5 victories, really put himself in the picture. If it wasn't for the likes of maybe Chimaev, he would have probably been MVP of the year. But sometimes when you're giving so much hype and everybody's riding on your dick, you start to believe that your shit don't stink. And I think that's been the case here with Kevin. I think he's a brilliant fighter. I love his trash talking. I think he brings character to the UFC. But what he's been proving here, he has got significant holes in his games. Derek Brunson was able to pretty much bully him in terms of keeping him on the ground, and Holland had no kind of comeback for that. I think the way he's won his fights before is he's talked his opponents around and kind of like got in their heads. Derek Brunson was having none of his bullshit. It's as simple as that. First round, he started quite well, landing the left. Brunson had a couple of kicks to the body. The first kind of issue with Holland was when he whiffed on a kick, which meant that Brunson was able to take him down, and he kept him down for the first round. The issue was Holland didn't take it seriously. He didn't see that he had an issue here. He was still chatting shit to the likes of Habib, giving his own corner team shit, saying, "Oh, I ain't got a decent coach here in my corner." I mean, talk about disrespectful. Second round, he had a little bit more opportunity to basically win the fight. He had Brunson really hurt. There was a point where we thought this was going to be a quick Kevin Owens victory, but Brunson was able to clinch, able to recover, and able to get Holland back down to the ground. This time he was going for the arm triangle. He damn near got it. He even got into position where he got his legs free and was able to push from the side, but unfortunately he just wasn't able to get enough squeeze to make Holland tap in the second. Third round again, we start on the feet, as every fight does, but it quickly goes back down to the ground, and Brunson is able to just bully Holland. The issue now into this third round was that Brunson was absolutely gassed. You could see he was knackered. His punches had a lot less power behind him. So this should have been Holland's opportunity to take the control in the fight. He had the more energy, he had the more power, but it was still able to be bullied on the floor. He hit a lot more shots from the bottom, which is good. That's how he beat Jacare, if you remember rightly. But he was just not able to do enough damage to Brunson that made Brunson think about changing his game plan and keeping the fight going to the ground. Going into the fourth, this was a make or break for Holland. And yet again, fell for the same kind of thing, going into the ground game. Brunson was able to just control him yet again. A couple of times, Holland was able to get back to his feet, but then was dragged back down to the floor. The issue was that he didn't take this fight seriously.
Absolutely, he didn't take the fight seriously. It was an absolute fucking shambles. Like you say, congratulations to Derek, obviously. All the shit that he was getting online with Kevin Owens and people overlooking him, and to be honest with you, I even thought he was going to lose the fight just because of how I'm serious, I thought how good Kevin Owens were, but I'm glad I've had my own words tonight, because Kevin Owens, he was putting on a performance like he were it was just shit. It was just proper shit.
Yeah, it was. He's been, I think he's been swept along, as UFC typically do, see a fighter having great potential, and he got swept along with all that hype train, the Sean O'Malley stuff, the Paulo Costa stuff, all that stuff, where a fighter is doing good things, then the UFC make them believe that they're the best, they're the next big thing. And they're not, and they don't focus on improving the game. They just think that every win is a given. And Derek Brunson, for the second time now in a row, he's become this this heart killer. He did it last time against Chabazin. He was Chabazin had a big heart train. Derek Brunson second main event spot. Second time he's been a heart train killer.
Yeah, well, that's it. Brunson has been in there with some of the best of the best, and fair enough, he may have lost, but they're learning experiences when you look at it in them sort of senses.
It wasn't that long ago he beat Lyoto Machida.
Exactly, so it's one of them. A lot of people can sleep on him all day, but after a win like that over Kevin Owens, and yeah, fair enough, I found it a bit boring, because don't get me wrong, I'm a grappling guy, I love grappling. I don't mind the takedowns, I don't mind exactly what he was doing, but he was holding him a lot of the times. He was just laying on him and he weren't doing much. And even when he was trying to punch, Holland was blocking a hell of a lot of them. That was the only good thing Holland did, was hold on and block, and Brunson were holding on from top. They weren't really doing much. And Holland, like you say, he said if he wins his fight, he's going down to 170 to challenge Usman. He gave his corner shit. He was speaking to fucking
Khabib. He were having chats
about
Khabib.
You need to slap yourself. That's what you do. You need to slap yourself. You need to wake up, because, like Bisping said, you want to be known as this guy who's trying to be funny in the octagon. It's funny when it's working for you, but when it's not working for you, you just look like a bell end. Like, he made you look like a bell end. I'm sure at one point Brunson said, like, "Are you going to talk after the fight?" And it was just one of them. And it sort of got to me as, well, it didn't get to me, but it sort of, when I looked at it as, when the fight was over, Derek knew that he'd won that, and Kevin Owens, he went over to him, basically, he could have grabbed his hand, and he might as well have just been rubbing himself up to him, walking along with him, and Derek's just walking away, and you can just see it in Derek's eyes, like, he don't want to, like, he probably looks at it as, you took the piss coming, like, up to this fight, leading up to this fight, you thought you were just going to walk through me because of this arch train. And you've just stepped in front of a dangerous... And let's put it this way. Look at Derek Brunson. He usually has a bit of a chubby belly because he's a wrestler, but he looks torn. He looks like he came to this shape knowing that he needs to win this fight. Obviously, like I said, he won his last fight, but he was going on a bit of a up-down situation. And then especially with this big name fight, if you want to call it, he's just made that big name look like a fucking amateur. So... In that sense, yeah, Kevin Owens needs to stay in his lane. He needs to know what he needs to do. He definitely needs to work on his grappling. If his coaches are shit, don't give him shit in the fight. Don't they? Just sort it out afterwards. If you have got no good ground coach, just go and get some. Simple as that. Don't ask Khabib whilst he's there. How unprofessional does that look? I bet you Dana White, but that's, you know when Dana White, like, smiles like that. He's not smiling because he's funny, he's smiling because he's thinking, fuck's sake, my organisation looks like a fucking joke, doesn't it? People have paid for this fucking card in America, and look at this guy pissing about. Mm-hmm. So it's not a good, especially when you're not fucking winning, Yeah. It's like McGregor, it's alright when he's speaking shit when he's winning, not too much when he's fucking, when he's not up there and he's not the champion.
Yeah, and I think the difference between Holland and McGregor is, when McGregor is down in a fight, he cuts the kind of showboating and bullshit out. He knows he can switch it to be a professional, to turn up the level of performance. Kevin Holland didn't do that at all. Absolutely. He kept up the shit talk. He was absolutely dominated for five clear rounds. He had no second game. He had no, this shit talking ain't working. Derek Brunson did not come to play. It's as simple as that. He'd been disrespected in the build-up. He's seen how Kevin Holland has talked smack to other fighters and got in their heads and basically won fights by psychologically rather than with his skills.
And that's what I think he tried to do tonight. And he just didn't work.
And, he got nothing. He got no comeback from Derek Brunson, which is the best game plan. And hopefully, Kevin uses this as a tool to say, yeah, that might work for some people, but when it comes down to the crunch, if you're in a fight with somebody and they're not taking your smack talk, you need to turn up your output, and you need to. It certainly needs to learn wrestling. It's as simple as that. His wrestling was abysmal. He got absolutely bullied by someone who was gassed halfway through the fight.
Now, if I was a promoter of the UFC, which I never will be, but if I was, and if I was Sean Shelby, these are the fights I'd make. Brunson won that fight. I'd give him Costa, because Costa's back down from fighting Whitaker on short notice. Kelvin Gastelum stepped in because he's got the biggest balls out of the two. So give Brunson Costa, because Costa's got a shit ground game. As you said, he talks about his jiu-jitsu, but his jiu-jitsu is dog shit. But then you go to Kevin Holland, I'd make him eat his words. I'd give him fucking Chimaev. Obviously, that fast not on with Leon and stuff like that. I'd say to Chimaev, you fancy going up to middle like that? Because there's a guy who was saying that he's got a couple of dildos in his car ready to fuck you. So do you want to make him eat his words? Because I fucking would. Simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's childlike. For me, I think he needs to go back to the drawing board. I mean, the guy's still top 10, so going down.
I don't think he's top 10 after that performance.
Going down too far is maybe is. I mean, you don't want him up against someone like Alexio De Chiri or someone like Tom Breeze, for example. But certainly, someone maybe among the level of Tavares, perhaps, or Akhmedov, Amari Akhmedov.
You say it could be, or even giving the guy in front of him, give him Uriah Hall. You say give him number 9, oof. Number 10. If that's the case.
Oof! I mean, that's. That's, I mean, Uriah Hall's on a massive win streak recently. I mean, he's not that long ago. He knocked out Anderson Silva.
Archer versus Archer.
I think Uriah may have Chris Weidman next month, but I'd certainly have him against the winner of that match.
If I say that all the fights, the only person in the top 10 who's not took is Paulo Costa.
There's Cannonier as well, I think.
Oh, Jared Cannonier. So yeah, well, there's two fighters who's not fighting. So that's saying that Kevin Holland, no, he doesn't deserve a opponent like Cannonier or Costa or anything like that. So Brunson out of them two, then yeah, give Brunson one of them two. But yeah, but Kevin Holland.
I think you hit the nail on the head with Brunson versus Costa. That'd be a great fight, and then I'd have. Holland, maybe even against the loser of Weidman and Uriah Hall.
Oh, after the performance of that, I just wouldn't even give him a decent near fight. I'd have to.
No, but it's still, the fact is, it's still he still sells tickets, he still sells events. So I wouldn't drop him back down to like the lower ranks, because he's definitely a top 15 fighter.
Yeah, I'd say the top 15 fighter, but with a performance like that and you take it piss, you're getting your arse whooped every single time if you're looking at the top 5, especially in the middleweight division, because, fucking hell, everyone might sleep on Izzy now because he's just been beat off Jan, but he hasn't been beat at middleweight.
No.
And he's beat everyone at middleweight, so.
Yeah, there's not anyone likely to beat him at middleweight.
Exactly, that is his weight. Mixed martial arts, that is his weight, simple as that. So it's, that's a killer's division there. Kevin Holland, man, he was, I want some of what he's smoking if he thought he was going to go down and beat fucking if he, that was his performance.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So let's have a quick look forward to next week's event, a numbered pay-per-view, UFC 260. Unfortunately, like I said earlier in the show, we lost the co-main event, Alexander Volkanovski against Brian Ortega, because there's been a bit of an outbreak in Volkanovski's team, which cost this event is co-main event and next week's event is co-main event. So as of now, there's only four fights scheduled for the main card, but the UFC have said that another one will get announced in the next couple of days. But we've got the return of Sugar Sean O'Malley against Thomas Almeida. Let's see if he still is mentally unbeaten.
It's fucking stupid putting his undefeated record on the line again. Yeah. Shut up, clown.
And then co-main event, Tyrone Woodley against Vicente Luque, which is going to be an absolute bop if we can get the Tyrone Woodley that was a killer in the in that welterweight division, rather than the Tyrone Woodley that just likes to be wrestle fucked. And then main event, this is a fight we've been waiting for forever. Stipe Miocic taking on the absolute animal of Francis Ngannou.
2017 and the last four, and I just knew. How many years have you been recognised in 2017?
Four years since the last four.
Waiting for this fight.
Both have grown as fighters, both have really kind of upped the game, and this will be a match watched by a certain former light heavyweight champion with very much bated breath. I wonder if he's got a preference to who he wants to win, because I don't think anyone could handle the power of Ngannou.
Well, I was speaking to him tonight, and we were speaking about Francis, and he's like, oh fucking hell, Stipe will just take it down again, which is a possibility, he will do, but then at the end of the day, when he said that, my response was, well, why the fuck would you not? Why would you want to get hit by him? But like, if he hit me, uppercutting me, he'd probably lift me off my fucking feet, lad. Look at the size of him, man.
But the word is that Francis has spent a lot of time actually on his ground game, so
he'll need to, because if he, you definitely know he's not going to be looking for subs. You know that he's going to be trying to be getting back to his feet as much.
But you also know that Stipe is not going to want to spend long periods of time standing and banging with him.
Because, absolutely not.
Francis is the kind of person that not only would spin your jaw, it'd take your soul.
Well, that's Francis, he's still got a lot of muscle, and that's a lot of lactic acid that can build up, and a lot of oxygen he's going to need. And Stipe's good at pressure, and that's why he's the heavyweight king. Mm-hmm. Got the most title defences than anybody else in that division, any other champion in that division. And yeah, he's good at putting pressure on, and if Francis Ngannou can't handle the pressure, it's not like he's a small guy, he's a lean guy, he's a brick fucking wall. He's a bit like a brick shithouse, so he's definitely a force to be reckoned with, but don't sleep on Stipe, man.
Absolutely not. So yeah, tune in next week to hear the live breakdown from us about that event. Before we go, we'd love to need to give some thanks to the networks for providing us a platform to be able to shoot our shit. So there's at Shooting the Sports Ish, follow them on all social media platforms, at Chairshot and at Visionaries Global Media. Definitely consider subscribing to the Shooting the Sports Ish Patreon, and definitely go and follow Five Rounds on every social media out there. Follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow Birthday Boy here as a little present at Kirby_Carlos. Thank you all for listening. And that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.